Welcome to another edition of the Kansas Policy Institute podcast. I'm Paul Sutar, your host, and today we're talking with Dave Traubert, president of the Kansas Policy Institute. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Paul.
Well, that sure was a long legislative session. Let's talk about what they accomplished.
What they accomplished was inflicting what may be the greatest travesty ever done to Kansans. A very large tax increase that was wholly unnecessary.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that feel that way, and I know there are a lot of legislators who know that the people feel that way. Their claim is that they just got stuck, and they had to do something because, you know, of course, they have to have a balanced budget. What's your take?
Well, they did get stuck, but they got stuck because the majority of legislators in the House and the Senate and in both parties, Republican and Democrat, had zero interest in reducing the cost of government. What dragged it out to a large extent as far as it did was that there's a group of legislators, particularly in the House, a smaller group in the Senate, that insisted that they wanted to see the cost of government reduced. You had that block that wouldn't look at a tax increase when we hadn't done anything of substance to reduce the cost of government. And you also had the Democrats and a large group of Republicans, kind of the what's called the moderates, who really wouldn't propose either a tax increase or a spending change. They really didn't have any interest in seeing the budget balanced because their political motivation was to have the process implode and increase their chances of taking control of the House and Senate in the next election cycle.
Sure. So they could just point fingers and say, look at what those guys did.
Yeah. And at the whole time, deliberately allowing things to implode and not offering up any kind of either a tax increase or a spending reduction. They sat on their hands.
So Kansas taxpayers are held hostage for politics yet again.
There you go.
So give me some of the nuts and bolts of what they did and what it's going to do to taxpayers and citizens of Kansas.
Sure. I'll just hit the highlights. The state sales tax was increased from 6.15% to 6.5%. The cigarette tax was increased by 50 cents from $0.79 to $1.29 per pack. There's a tax on e-cigarette products that was a new tax. They eliminated most deductions. The only thing that's allowed now is charitable contributions, completely deductible, and mortgage interest and property tax at 50% of their amount. There were also things like having a one-time amnesty. People who owe something can file it quickly and not have to pay any penalties. That's the majority of the elements of the tax plan.
So effectively, we have a sales tax increase, and by the changes that occurred on income tax, we have also an income tax increase. There'll be more revenue, they hope, and people will be ending up paying more sales taxes and income taxes.
Right. They will. More income taxes because of the deductions were scheduled in statute to begin phasing out. That was pulled forward. So you'll pay more of an income. If you deduct, you'll pay more income tax in the next couple of years than you would have otherwise. And you'll certainly pay more sales tax. And if you smoke, you'll pay more cigarette tax.
Right. And I'm imagining that's not going over very well around the country either, as people are watching Kansas and hopeful that maybe we'd be another model of how to do it right.
Well, what's going on, that's true. And what's going on but there is that the whole story isn't being told. The national media as well as local media have been on a tirade against tax reform. And the national media is involved because there is a concentrated effort on the left to paint Kansas as a failure to discourage any other states. I mean, they're being very open with saying this is a lesson to all of you states out there. The Kansas tax plan failed. It did not fail. The problem with the Kansas budget is that the spending was not reduced commensurate with the revenue reduction. Right. In 2012, when the original plan was passed, was at the end of the session. We did, Kansas Policy Institute did an analysis of that plan and in August of 2012, showing that a one-time 8% spending reduction was required with all of the elements in place. And after that one-time reduction, then spending could grow with as revenues grow, and everything would have been fine. But instead of reducing spending, the state increased spending, because that's what an awful lot of legislators think they need to do in order to get reelected.
Right. Well, there's certainly a lot of voices out there clamoring for more money. The chief among them, of course, is schools. But there are others out there. And I know, as legislators told me back when I spent some time in Topeka, for every one letter or email they would get from somebody asking for lower government spending, for lower taxes, et cetera, they'd get 100 from people, and a lot of them formulaic, telling them, oh, please spend more on this or spend more on that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we've become conditioned in this country to believe that you show your support for something by spending more money on it. Right. And spending more money on something, I mean, to use schools as a great example, the number one cost driver of the state budget, the evidence is very clear that simply spending more money doesn't improve achievement. The spending on public education has gone up by $2 billion in the last 10 years. But the achievement levels haven't really changed at all. In fact, the achievement gaps between low income and not low income, or for minorities, have gotten wider. That, I mean, and the State Department of Education agrees with that. Spending more money hasn't improved achievement. Right. But that's what drives it. Spend more, and that's, you know, that's how legislators show that they support public education.
Right. And I understand why legislators are afraid of that, because then they get painted as somebody who hates kids and hates schools and, you know, all the rest of that. And the rest of the story, the reality of the story, certainly doesn't get airtime in the broadcast media. It doesn't get space in print media. And frankly, I'm not so sure there are a lot of people in state government who do a good job of telling the rest of that story either.
They don't. And there's an awful lot of people who have an incentive to not allow the truth to come out. You know, it really comes down to, you have, as you said, with the email example, you have the state capitol is full of people asking for favors. They want more spending. And, you know, and the problem, you know, it's very simple how to have lower taxes. You simply have to reduce your spending, not by cutting services, but by providing the services at a better price. I mean, citizens and even legislators will agree that government doesn't operate efficiently. And that's all that we need to do, is provide the services at a better price, a more efficient delivery of the services. That would take care of it. But the problem is that if you do that, then there's less spoils to divide among the special interests that profit from excess government spending. And then the fallout from that is that there's less power for those who are doing the dividing of the spoils. And so you have the education interests, you have the unions, you have the highway contractors, you have everybody lining up, that, or hospital associations, because Medicaid is the second driver of the budget. Everybody's lining up for saying, spend more, spend more, spend more, because it will benefit them. And so the legislators most often will cave to that, because they're fearful. In fact, one legislator told Will Upton, who works for Americans for Tax Reform — this was on Will's Facebook page — Will asked one legislator why they didn't just reduce spending instead of all this tax fight. And he said, we'd all lose our jobs if we cut spending.
Yeah, that's a real key point right there. I am not a fan of a professional legislature, whether it be the national or the local or the state, rather. That just bothers me because they get into the idea of, I'd say it's even an entitlement. Well, you know, I have to come back. And if I have to come back, then, you know, I've got to win those votes. And I only win those votes by putting money in people's pockets.
Yeah, you know, some of the hypocrisy that was thrown about to try to justify this tax. I mean, it's, you know, it may be one of the largest tax increases in history. Of course, that's partly because it's coming on the heels of the largest tax reduction, and we're still going to be paying less tax long term than we would have without tax reform. But this tax increase was wholly unnecessary. Some people tried to say, well, we've just cut spending as far as we could. And that's laughable. I mean, there was, I'll give you just a few examples of what the legislature really didn't want to have to deal with. You go back to schools. Schools have built up cash reserves at the beginning of this year, totaling just in operating, not capital and debt, totaling $860 million. That's a $400 million increase since 2005, which only means schools were given more money than they needed to operate. They provided education. They graduated students. They had $400 million left over that went into the bank. So one solution would be to say, let's have you spend down some of that money you didn't need in prior years. No interest in that.
Right.
We had universities as well have large cash buildups, and just in their tuition funds alone, they've built up $76 million in increases, collected more than was spent since 2003. Some of that could have been required to be spent down. State employees get a much larger contribution toward their health care costs than most employees. If government just contributed to health care at the national average for single and family coverage, Kansas taxpayers would be spending $43 million less per year. We're paying 97% of the cost of single coverage, where the national average is that the employer pays 82%. Still paying the vast majority, but if we were just at the national average.
Right.
Those are just a few examples of the very easy things that could have been done to reduce the cost of government, and there just wasn't enough interest.
Well, it seems like, too, the legislature, I don't know, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like when they get started, they have a couple of pet projects, and then they have all sorts of other, I don't know, little things that they get distracted on, and they really don't put their focus on what I think should be their most important job, which is making sure that my tax dollars are being spent wisely and that they're being spent efficiently. It seems like an afterthought.
Well, there's a lot of people who think that, you know, having spent a lot of time in the state house, I know that part of the problem is that it's very difficult for legislators to get their hands on the information they need. The bureaucracy just doesn't want them to have it, frankly.
Yeah, that's especially, you know, true with schools, isn't it?
It's true, especially true with schools, but it's not untrue with pretty much any agency. I was corrected many years ago in an appropriations hearing by a legislator. I was talking about the budget process, and she stopped me and she said, "Mr. Traubert, you need to understand, we don't have a budgeting process in Kansas. We have an appropriations process." And that's absolutely the case. Agencies come in and say, "This is what we got last year, and we would like this much more, please."
Right.
We never really look at whether any of that spending has, maybe it was effective at one point, but no longer is necessary.
Right.
We never look at those metrics.
Well, and that's part of the whole government budgeting game, where, and I think more and more citizens, and hopefully more legislators, are becoming clued into this, that, you know, they got X dollars, like you said, last year, and then they write the budget that has an increase. And let's say if, you know, it's like if I went to my employer and say, hey, I'd like a 10% raise. And then my employer says, no, I can't do 10. I'll give you five. Then I go and say, hey, I got a 5% cut this year.
Yeah, that's the way the game gets played. You know, there were there was another part of the push for tax increase. There were some legislators saying, you know, we have to do this is about fairness. It's not fair that some businesses or business owners don't pay tax on their business profits, but their employees pay tax. And there's definitely a fairness discussion to be had. And so we tried to put other fairness issues on the table. You know, people think everybody's aware now, I think, that certain businesses are exempt from paying taxes on their profits. The, you know, any salaries are taxed, but that's not the first group of tax-exempt citizens in Kansas. The first group is government retirees. Government retirees, people on CAPERS at the city and the state level and in the school districts, only pay tax on the small portion they contribute to their pension. The majority of their pension comes from taxpayers, and that is exempt from income tax. Now, you and I, when we retire, whatever retirement we have, whether it's from an employer or we put it aside, we will pay taxes on that. But government retirees get a $52 million per year tax-exempt bonus. Right. There was no interest in putting that fairness issue on the table. We brought up the fact that commercial and industrial property holders pay 2.2 times the effective tax rate as homeowners. That's not fair, but nobody wanted to talk about that fairness issue. So we said, look, let's understand. If you want to have a fairness discussion, let's have it, but let's put all the fairness issues on the table. No, we just want to put this one on. And that means it's not about fairness, it's about political expediency. In other words, this is what I think I need to do to get reelected.
Right. And the bottom line with this, I think, from my perspective, is it's going to be bad long-term for the state. Companies that, it's sort of like our foreign policy. You know, if you have friends overseas and you tell them we're going to stand with you, and then you have some sort of a change, and then you say, oh, we're not going to stand by you, they're not going to trust you anymore. And I think it's the same thing with businesses. If you say, look, we're going to do better, take care of businesses, we're going to become a lower tax state, we're going to be welcoming to businesses and all that, and we want you to come move here because we're going to have jobs, and then you backtrack on that, that's a pretty serious blow to the confidence that I think the state needs to build.
It can be. I mean, stability and predictability are very key factors in any tax policy. And regardless of how you go about it, if you're sending mixed signals, as the Kansas legislature certainly has done, then there is there's going to be some fallout. It's hard to measure how much, but there's going to be a price to be paid for that. The good news is, if there's any good news to come out of this, is that the majority of the increase is on consumption taxes rather than income tax. And that's better for the economy because consumption taxes are the least damaging. Any tax will have a negative impact on economic growth. Some degree of taxation is absolutely necessary, but the excess amount is always going to have a negative impact. The consumption tax has the least damaging, and it's also the consumption tax is the one that's better for government. You only have to look back to the last recession to understand this. In 2009 and 2010, income taxes declined 21% over that two-year period, but sales tax only dipped by 3%. The sales tax is clearly a more stable revenue source for government. This talk about we need a three-legged stool is just a way of justifying not only having an income tax, but then getting to decide who has to pay the most income tax.
Right, right. And then it becomes a redistribution scheme and all sorts of problems. And so
that's what an income tax is, yeah.
Right, right. Well, thank you, Dave. That's been really enlightening about this. Of course, now we have until next January to try to get some sense back in the folks up in Topeka and try to get this addressed. Of course, until then, we'll be dealing with what they've given us. And of course, I'm assuming there's more information on this on the kansaspolicy.org website.
There is. We've written pretty extensively about this on the KPI blog and done some other analysis elsewhere on the site that's available. The Kansas Green Book also has some data that has comparative spending and taxation data on all 50 states. That's right. Pretty eye-opening.
And there's a link to that on the left column of the Kansas Policy webpage. Again, that's at kansaspolicy.org. Thank you, Dave. Thanks for taking time to talk about these issues and for the hard work that you folks at Kansas Policy do.
Thanks, Paul.